achievers get promotions while honest researchers like me are left behind. A wasted life, he thought. Yet, as he looked out at Jupiter, glowing like a beacon in the dark depths of infinite space, the old excitement simmered within him. There's a whole universe out there to explore, worlds upon worlds. I won't be able to study Jupiter or its moons, but I'll be at Saturn before any of the others. I'll be directing the first real-time probes of Titan's surface. He thought of the tracked rover vehicle that his staff was building. It will roam across the surface of Titan and obtain more data about that world in a few weeks than all the scientists back on Earth have been able to amass in their lifetimes. Before the bright youngsters get there on their torch ships, I'll already be getting data from Titan and from the cloud deck of Saturn and the ice rings. Perhaps my life won't be a waste after all, thought Edouard Urbain. Perhaps this time I'll hit the jackpot. Perhaps there is a Nobel Prize waiting for me in the future after all. Perhaps, he even thought, Jean-Marie will return to me.
In the workshop where he and his team labored, Manny Gaeta was walking Chris Cardenas around his EVA suit. Von Helmholtz and his four technicians stood at the benches that ran along two walls of the chamber, watching their boss and the nanotech expert as they slowly paced around the heavy, bulky suit, like shoppers inspecting a new outfit built for Frankenstein's monster. She had arrived at the lab carrying a small briefcase, which she had left on the floor by the door as soon as Gaeta came over to greet her. The technicians stayed well clear of it. Now she and Gaeta stared up at the suit, looming head and shoulders above them, gleaming in the light from the ceiling lamps. It's big, Cardenas murmured, with its helmet and jointed arms, and reminded her of a medieval suit of armor. It's gotta be big, Gaeta said, as they paced slowly around it. Lots of gear inside. You got room in there for a cafeteria, she joked. With a rueful grin, Gaeta answered, Nope, just enough room inside for me to squeeze in. The rest is packed with sensors, cameras, VR transmitters, servo motors to move the arms and legs, radiation armor, life support systems. Systems? Plural? You bet. Redundant systems are the only way to go. One corrupts out, you can live on the other. Cardenas peered at the gleaming armor's bright finish. Is this Cermet? Partly, said Gaeta. Lots of organometallics in it, too, and semiconductor surfaces protected by borosilicates and buckyfilament shields. How do you put it on? He walked her around to the suit's back. You climb in through this hatch. Cardenas broke into a laugh, like the trap door in old-fashioned Long John's. Gaeta tilted his head to one side. I never thought of it like that, but oh yeah, you're right, kind of like that. Sobering up somewhat, Cardenas said, Could you show me how to get into it? Sure, you want to go in, it's okay, I can help you. Cardenas shook her head. No, you get into it, nodding toward the briefcase she had left by the door. Then I can take samples of whatever residues you leave on the outside. Samples? If you want nanomachines specifically tailored to clean up your residues, I have to know exactly what they are, down to the molecular level. Gaeta nodded his understanding. Okay. He called to Von Helmholtz. Yo, Fritz, I gotta get inside. Von Helmholtz and the four techs started for the suit. The chief technician hesitated, though, and asked, Dr. Cardenas, will you need your case? Yes, I will, thank you. He brought the briefcase to Cardenas while two of the technicians began unsealing the suit's hatch, and the other two booted up the monitoring consoles standing along the far side of the lab. You plan to go outside when we pass Jupiter? Cardenas asked Gaeta as Von Helmholtz handed her the briefcase. Yep. We'll have a couple of million VR viewers sharing the experience as we zip past Jupiter. Should be fun. Flying past Jupiter is seen from outside. I'd like to experience that myself, Cardenas said. The technician swung open the hatch in the back of the suit, and Gaeta stepped to it. Over his shoulders, he told Cardenas, Sure, why not? Fritz can fix you up with a VR rig, can't you, Fritz? It would be an honor, said Von Helmholtz. Cardenas couldn't decide if he meant it or he was being snotty. She watched as Gaeta hiked one leg up over the rim of the hatch, grabbed the sides with either hand, and then pulled his other leg in. His head disappeared into the darkness inside. She heard a thud, then a string of muffled Spanish curses. "It's pretty tight in there," one of the technicians said, grinning at her. Gaeta called, "Okay, I'm set." The techs closed the hatch and sealed it shut. Walking around to the front of the suit, Cardenas had to crane her neck to see Gaeta's face through the heavily tinted visor of the helmet. The right arm of the suit stirred into motion with a buzz and whir of servo motors. "Hello, Chris," boomed Gaeta's voice, amplified powerfully as he waved at her. "Want to dance?" But she was already on one knee, opening the briefcase that carried her analysis tools, all business.
Jupiter encounter minus 2 days. The cafeteria was bustling and noisy with the clatter of silverware and 100 buzzing conversations. Ilya Timoshenko ignored the lines of people waiting at the various counters, preferring to punch out his meal selections from the automated dispensers. He had filled his tray with a McGlop sandwich and a bowl of steaming soup. Now he stood before the drinks dispenser. Decisions, decisions. Timoshenko turned his head to see that it was Janssen, one of the top engineers, standing next to him, tall and lean and pale as the winter sun. Without a word, Timoshenko slid his plastic cup beneath the cola nozzle and leaned on the button. Then he walked away, looking for a table where he could be alone. As he unloaded his tray, though, Janssen walked up to the table carrying a salad and a glass of milk. "Do you mind if I sit here?" Janssen said, already putting his sparse lunch on the table. "I need to talk with you." Timoshenko said, "About what?" Janssen was one of the bosses, several rungs up the ladder above him. "Politics," said Janssen as he pulled out his chair and sat down. Suddenly, Timoshenko had no appetite. He sat facing the pale Norseman. "I have no interest in politics." "You did once. You were quite an activist. And look where it's got me." Janssen waved a hand vaguely. "This isn't so bad, is it? If you have to be exiled, this is better than most places." Despite himself, Timoshenko asked, "Were you exiled?" "No. I chose to come here. For me, this is an opportunity to be in charge of a major engineering operation." "To be a boss, you mean?" "You could be a boss, too," Janssen said. "The biggest boss of all." Timoshenko scowled at him. "I mean it, Ilya. You could run for the office of chief administrator once the new constitution is put into effect." "You're joking." "I'm serious. You could run, and you could win. All the engineers and technicians would vote for you. That's a major block of votes." "Why would they vote for me?" "Because you're one of us. Everybody knows you and respects you." Timoshenko grunted derisively. "I have very few friends. Hardly anyone knows me. And those who do don't like me very much. I can't say that I blame them either." Janssen would not be put off. Pulling his palm comp from his tunic pocket, he began tapping out numbers as he spoke. "Politics boils down to arithmetic," he said, pecking away. "You are much more respected by your fellow workers than you think. They'll vote for you in preference to Urbain and..." "Urbain? He'll be running for office." "Of course. He's head of the science department, isn't he? The scientists think they own this habitat. They think we're all here to serve them. Of course he'll run, and he'll win, unless you can rally the engineers and technicians." Timoshenko shook his head. "I have no interest in politics," he repeated. But he stayed and listened, and looked at the numbers Janssen was pecking out on his palm comp.
Half an hour later, on the other side of the crowded, noisy cafeteria, Edouard Urbain was trying to finish his lunch and get back to his office. The cold potato soup was a poor imitation of Vichyssoise. He hadn't had a decent meal since leaving Montreal. Wilmot has no interest in cuisine, of course. Once I become chief administrator, I will see to it that the cooks learn how to cook. There were 1,000 things to do.